This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Good Monday morning. You remember the mamas and the papas? I guess two of them are still around, but I'm not sure. We'll find out a little bit later. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are back. Yes, we are back on the air after a long respite and very happy to be so. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy, my partner, Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us this Monday morning. By the way, we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And that's 9 to 10 for those of you listening to us in the Central Time Zone. And our goal is to really present to you in an entertaining way the political landscape, both at a national and sometimes at a local level, even though, we have people from kind of all walks of life. But we do it through the spectrum of a libertarian viewpoint. We think you're going to find we always try to do it with a good dose of common sense and humor. We'll be talking, by the way, in a few minutes with Tim Snowball of the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we're going to talk about campus free speech. You've probably been hearing about some of the attempts to squelch conservatives. Students that are conservatives on campus. Well, there's a group of kids at the University of Texas, Austin, that are suing the school because they feel they are being silenced. So I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation about the lawsuit with Tim Snowball. And then later on, Michelle Minton of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, she's going to join us, and we're going to talk about vaping. Vaping. Do you do vaping? Is it the cause of recent lung trouble among people, among some of its users? Well, we're going to discuss that with Michelle, and you may be surprised at what she has to say. So stay tuned for that as well. And we would not be Freedom Works unless we had an ultimate top 10. We do. We're going to tell you the top 10 states where you will most likely get robocalls. Robocalls. Do you think, Ed, that Florida is one of the top 10?
I think I get all the robocalls in Florida.
No, you don't, because I get the other 50%.
And I roll with some of them.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I have different things. What I'll do is, if it's a woman, I'll let her go through her whole thing, and then I'll just say, be silent, and say, what are you wearing right now?
Oh, God.
And then she'll hang up. And then if it's a guy, I'll let him do his whole script that he's got to read. And then when he's done, he'll say, is that something you're interested in? And I'll say, no, I just thought I'd waste a minute of your time since you wasted a minute of my time.
I thought you were going to say you would ask him, what are you wearing?
No.
But no, you don't do that with a guy.
I'm not doing that.
Okay.
No.
Uh-huh. Well, you're very cruel. That's what I think. But I generally do not answer. Now, these days, you can have the phone number appear on your television screen. You know that. So that you know where it's coming from, correct?
Yeah, but what if I called you from a toll-free number? Then you wouldn't answer my call.
Well, I would know your number. I mean, I know our toll-free number. I would answer. But no, I would not answer a toll-free number.
Okay.
Nope, I would not.
But they're pretty inventive now. Some come up and say Clearwater, Florida. And
I know they do. And I don't answer those anymore unless I know the number, because you're right.
Yeah.
They will call you from a local number. They somehow pirate the number.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of scary.
Sneaky.
It is sneaky. So we'll talk about that with our top 10, and we'll find out what the states are and which state you are in, any of you. By the way, we are sponsored in part by Master Barber Andrew Ceresi. He who gives the best haircut in Tampa Bay. We want you to visit his shop, if you can do so, in the Overcash Plaza that's in Dunedin. It's just north of Route 580 on Overcash Drive. A great haircut, great price. You cannot beat the price. You cannot beat the ambiance when you go in there. So please visit Andrew, the Master Barber. And also, don't forget, you can always listen to us on our website, which is OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. And Big Ed sets up our podcasts on there as well, so you can have the double pleasure. You can listen to us live, and then you can go back and listen to some of our older shows. OurFreedomWorks.com. So, Ed, it's great to be back. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, I think everything's still there when you left.
Everything looks the
same. Old cup of coffee.
I got the same lousy mug.
I know, but your old light that you had, we had to take that out back and shoot it.
You did?
Yeah, it was. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't stand up anymore.
You know, that's true. And I used to tighten the doggone thing. It looked like it was out of the 1930s.
We had paper clips in it and everything to hold it together.
You did. I remember that. Well, I like this one. It looks like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie War of the Worlds.
I did.
Those things that attacked us from Mars looked like that in the 1953 version.
So you're not talking about the Tom Cruise one?
Well, Tom Cruise came out with a great War of the Worlds, but in the original one in 1953, there was a guy by the name of Gene Barry. Mm. You probably don't remember him.
No.
He starred in Bat Masterson on television. And he was the star of that movie in 1953.
Gotcha.
And all those stupid little Martians looked like this with the long...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Long necks and everything.
Okay.
All right. Well, enough about that. We got so much to talk about today. When we finish our first conversation with Tim Snowball, I'm going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. We're going to talk a little bit about... I think there are some Democratic debates Thursday. I know you're not going to miss those. I think there's only 10 candidates that will be on stage. So that'll be fun. We'll talk a little bit about that. I want to talk also about the job report. You know, we get these job reports. Actually, they're pretty doggone good. But you wouldn't know that if you read the mainstream media. They make it seem like a recession is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
As long as Donald Trump is in office, nothing but trouble is right around the corner. So we're going to talk about the truth about that. And also, I want to get around to, I think, a very interesting article by this guy, Andrew Napolitano. Do you know him? He's a judge on Fox News. Kind of a libertarian.
Sounds familiar.
He's going to talk a little bit about the Constitution and Donald Trump and spending money that Trump spends, whether or not he can do it constitutionally. Kind of an interesting take on the whole thing. Also, there's another guy that's running for president. He just announced it yesterday. His name is Mark Sanford. He used to be the governor of South Carolina. And he is a Republican. And he wants to run against Trump in the Republican presidential primary. Now, does he have a chance? Well, we're going to talk about that as well. So let us take our break. And when we come back, Tim Snowball.
Find a new place to dwell. When it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be. I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just a lonely. I could die.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The Brian Cash Clause Radio Show. More business for your business every Thursday at 2. 106.1 FM, 1340 AM. Local business owners, listen up. We direct more customers through your doors with a printed coupon book and radio show. More business for your business. Call 727-600-4889. That's 727-600-4889.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Marshall.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
Tampa Bay, get excited. The Voice and the Pinhead Show every Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. I'm the Pinhead, Rob Wild, and the voice is Jerry Barisano. So whether you got healthier, lighter, richer, or poorer listening to Tan Talk all week, we guarantee we'll put a smile on your face as we give you our unique slant on news, sports, and entertainment. We'll also have some very unique, exciting guests.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on Freedom Works and delighted to have Tim Snowball join us. Tim is an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation and PLF, great organization, by the way, is involved in an issue at the University of Texas Austin, where three University of Texas Austin students who are members of a group called Speech First are actually suing the school because they feel they are being silenced on certain policies. Tim, welcome to Freedom Works.
Paul, good morning. How are you?
We're just peachy keen here, actually. We're doing very, very well. And I find this topic to be so important these days. It's not just at the UT Austin campus where the discussions have been going on about free speech and students, mainly, I guess you would say, conservative students. Tell us a little bit about the suit, however, and what is going on there at UT Austin?
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I mean, the first thing I want to talk about, and as I'm sure your audience is aware of, is our First Amendment. It's one of the most important amendments that we have in the Bill of Rights, and in particular for this case, protects our freedom of speech. The founders put a high price on the ability of individuals to speak their own minds and to stick to their own guns when it comes to ideas. And they talked about the so-called marketplace of ideas, which is the idea that we can all go out in the public square or anywhere else and say what we want to say. And if we don't disagree with somebody, you know, you can tell me you disagree with them and come to some kind of compromise. So the First Amendment applies to public universities like UT Austin. I think anyone who's been paying attention to this issue realizes that in the last 10 years or so, you've seen the proliferation of different policies at different public universities designed to shield students from so-called harmful or upsetting ideas. And so you've seen this manifest in many different ways. In particular, at UT Austin, they passed two policies that are the basis of this lawsuit. The first is they passed a series of so-called speech codes that institute standards like students are not allowed to say offensive or harmful things on campus or in their school emails or in their dorms. And the problem, of course, is that what does offensive or harmful mean? These are amorphous, broad categories. You don't know what they mean. I don't know what they mean. And the result, of course, is that these students are remaining silent. Their speech is chilled, in other words. And so that they keep silent rather than risk official sanction by the university. They can be have their permanent records affected. They can even be kicked out of the university if it's found they've said harmful or offensive things. Now, I don't know about you, Paul, but I place a high price on my own ability to speak my mind and to say my piece. I went to the University of California at Berkeley left for undergrad, and one of the reasons I went there is because I said, oh, this is the home of the free speech movement. Of course, students now are tearing down light poles and lighting fires, and they have to call in the riot police, right? But at the time that I went there, you could still speak your mind. That's one of the ideas, I think, undergirding a public education or education at universities. The second policy at UT Austin is they have this so-called campus climate response team that then goes out. It's partly made up of police officers and campus officials that goes out and investigates students for so-called bias incidents. So let's say you and I are sitting in class, we're discussing, Justice Kavanaugh, maybe the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. Some student in class overhears what we're talking about and goes, oh, these two are biased, or they're saying something that I find to be offensive. They can go then anonymously report to us for making harmful or offensive statements to the university. And the campus climate response team will come out to our dorm rooms, knock on our door and investigate us. And then all of a sudden you have a bunch of, you know, our dorm mates or classmates go, oh, these two, you know, what are they up to? They're up to no good. And I think that, you know, given the, you know, kickers of campus culture, that puts people in an awkward or harmful situation.
I mean, this is almost unbelievable. I'm listening to you. Do they really have a police force on campus that will come to your dorm if you've been talking about a Supreme Court justice? Really?
Yeah, so the particular students in this case are three anonymous students at UT Austin. They decided to remain anonymous, even though they're the plaintiffs in a lawsuit, because they're afraid of what will happen to their reputations or even to their safety if they come out as conservatives on campus at UT Austin. And the subjects they want to talk about, and I want you to, you know, make sure you're sitting down now, because the subjects they want to talk about are pretty harmful or offensive, I think. They want to talk about President Trump. They'd like to talk about immigration. They'd like to talk about Justice Kavanaugh. They'd like to talk about American exceptionalism. And so these are, I mean, you know, these are pretty outrageous subjects that they want to talk about in campus. And I think that this goes to show just how broad, you know, and vague these standards are. And under the First Amendment, you know, it would be a violation for the school to straight out come out and have a content-based prohibition and say, you can't talk about this. But it's just as much a violation to have standards that are so amorphous that reasonable individuals like you or me could not police our own behavior.
Yeah. We're talking with Tim Snowball. He is an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation. We're talking a little bit about this suit that has been brought by three University of Texas Austin students. There are members of a group called Speech First, and they've brought a lawsuit. What is the status, Tim, of this lawsuit against UT Austin in terms of where it is in the courts right now, and specifically, are they asking that these speech codes be totally removed? I mean, what is the nuts and bolts of the suit?
Well, certainly. So, yes. So, individuals like, so I'll talk a little bit about Speech First. Speech First is a great organization. It was started last year, specifically designed to push back against some of these harmful policies. So, what Speech First does is says, look, if you are a student at a public university, you are experiencing trouble there, you feel like you can't speak your mind, they've got you know, crazy speech codes or other bad, harmful speech policies on campus, join Speech First. We have resources available to help you out, whether that be legal, whether that just be advice. And so it's a great organization. So these three students are members of Speech First. Speech First filed the lawsuit on their behalf, and they're seeking so-called equitable relief. So equitable relief, when you go into court, you basically say, all right, you know, Your Honor or Judge or whoever you're dealing with, you know, we want a declaration. We want the court to declare that the laws that we're challenging are unconstitutional. So that's so-called declaratory relief. We'd also like injunctive relief. An injunction is a legal order where the court steps in and says, you know, because we found this law to be unconstitutional, we're going to enter this court order saying that it can no longer be enforced. So the students at Speech First, these three students, they're not seeking any kind of money, you know, monetary damages. Like, imagine somebody, you know, walking across a restaurant or the slip and fall case, you know, they hurt their hip or something. They're not seeking any money. What they're basically seeking is just for the court to step in and intervene on behalf of their individual rights. So they filed this lawsuit last year.
Last year. Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Last year, I believe it was the end of last year or at the very beginning of 2019, and they moved to that for a preliminary injunction, which is a court order initially saying, like, while the lawsuit's pending, let's have the court step in and say, you know, at least while the lawsuit's pending, we're not going to allow these three students or other students at UT Austin to be harmed while the case is being litigated by the lawyers. And that can take years. A civil case can take years. So ask the court to step in and stop this while we're litigating the case.
Well, have they stopped it, or have they temporarily?
Well, no. The court took a very interesting step here. They stepped in, even though the other side had not moved yet for a motion to dismiss, the court stepped in and of its own accord and authority dismissed the entire case without even being asked.
Dismissed the case that the three students had brought?
But they dismissed the case. The three students had been brought on a theory that their claims were not specific enough. And it was an interesting thing. The first paper that you file, the first filing in a civil lawsuit, is what we call a complaint. And the complaint is basically a listing of different allegations against the defendant. Now, the defendant can come back in their response, and they can either come through and deny each of those allegations, or they can file a motion to dismiss. Both of those are available under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. So without the defendants even filing a motion to dismiss, the court steps in of its own authority and dismisses the case and says, well, I know that the students are saying that they want to talk about these subjects, they want to talk about President Trump and immigration and Justice Kavanaugh, but they didn't say what specific statements they want to make. They just said what categories of speech they feel like are being chilled. So because their statements weren't specific enough, you know, that doesn't, you know, meet the standard for the court, which is, of course, you know, kind of ridiculous.
So let me ask you, if it's been dismissed, has an appeal been made by the students? Where are we right now legally?
Yes, the case has been appealed. It's now on appeal at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. That's one rung down. There's, you know, the different circuit courts in the United States based on region. So we're one step down from the U.S. Supreme Court. The plaintiffs have filed an appeal at the Fifth Circuit and asked, you know, in support of the students, in support of free speech and Speech First, Pacific Legal Foundation, my organization, we wrote what's called an amicus brief, and that's basically a friend of the court brief where we stepped in and we provided some additional arguments to support them in addition to what the parties were going to be, you know, filing.
At the appeals level. You're at the appeals level.
At the appellate level. So we filed that brief several weeks ago. Not only did we argue kind of, you know, the ridiculous nature of the court dismissing the case based upon them not making, you know, saying what specific statements they wanted to make, but we also spoke about campus culture. And we go, look, it used to be the case that when, you know, students went off to college, one of the things that administrators were doing was instilling a sense of virtue when it comes to civic participation, our institutions, the First Amendment, you know, how to be a responsible member of our democracy. And that used to be the case. And we're talking about kids here, right? We're talking about kids who are aged 18 to 22. Mm-hmm. It's flipped now.
Right. Oh, so right now it's in the appeals process. And how long, I mean, if it was filed at the beginning of the year, and this is September, I mean, how long is this going to be dragged out?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I remember when I was a brand new attorney, one of the first cases I worked on, I came in and I asked the senior attorney that I was working on the case with, well, hey, we just filed this paper, I said, is there a standard? How many months do they have before they have to return this ruling? And he looked at me and he goes, you know, snowball, you know, rookie question, right? There's nothing so much like God on earth as a federal judge in a courtroom. So there really is no timeline. There's no set timeline under the, you know, the federal rules.
So in the meantime,
the Constitution.
Right. So in the meantime, the speech code of University of Texas Austin continues. Is that right?
It continues unabated, unfortunately, in addition to many other codes and different things across the country.
Wow. Tim, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for your take on this. We're going to follow this issue, and I'm hoping it will be resolved, and would love to have you back on maybe down the road when maybe something like this is moving along again. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Tim Snowball, Pacific Legal Foundation. We are going to take a break. When we come back, Michelle Minton of the Competitive Enterprise is going to join us. We're going to talk about vaping.
Fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
Do you have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for the Drs. John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey there, I'm Lynn About Town. Are you looking for something different for your talk radio? Then tune in to our show, Talk of the Town, every Tuesday night from 5 to 5:30. Stay up to date with what's happening in your Tampa Bay. Hear from my special guests, get the cool event news, or call in to become part of the conversation. Whatever your poison, I promise you, this one won't kill you, but it'll definitely make you feel good. Talk of the Town, where good guys and good news meet. See you Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Talking Sports moved to Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 4 and joining forces with Knockout Radio to become one. We will continue to talk all sports with a heavy dose of MMA and bare knuckle boxing. The longest running MMA radio show and the longest running sports radio show in Tampa Bay come together every Wednesday from 2 to 4. If you can walk the walk, then listen to us talk the talk. Sponsored by 8 Man Strong and Stafsa.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, and we are delighted to welcome an old friend of ours from the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute, Michelle Minton, who is a senior fellow there. And we're going to talk about something that a lot of people are talking about, not just nationally, but here in Tampa Bay as well. And that is this whole issue of vaping and whether or not vaping is causing lung disease among some of the people that use it. Michelle, welcome to Freedom Works again.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure, as always. You know, Michelle, locally over the weekend, story here in our Tampa Bay Times talks about the fact that the county of Hillsborough, that's where the city of Tampa is located, they've agreed to consider new restrictions on the purchase of vaping products by underage users, voting unanimously to support a request to have their legal staff bring back a list of vaping restrictions that could be written into their county ordinances. But in the meantime, there is a question of whether or not vaping is as harmful as maybe smoking cigarettes. And the Competitive Enterprise Institute has an interesting look at it. Tell us a little bit about this whole situation with vaping and whether or not it's a dangerous habit.
Yeah, so Tampa, Hillsborough County is not alone in kind of responding to this recent spat of lung ailments with new restrictions on e-cigarettes and vaping. And some of it's understandable in that a lot of the news media coverage of this outbreak, you know, it's up to about 400 people have been hospitalized supposedly with vaping-related lung issues. You know, Michigan just banned e-cigarette flavors in response to this as well. The CDC has put out some statements. The problem is that, you know, vaping, nicotine-based vaping, has been around for about 12 years now with people, you know, millions of people doing it every single day, and nothing like this has ever happened before. And it's currently not happening anywhere else in the world. It seems that none of this is actually related to just vaping, but specifically what people are vaping. A lot of the reports, most of them, are saying that most of these cases seem to be related to illegal cannabis vaping, and whether it's some kind of contaminant in a black market cannabis product, or people are using these THC oils and putting them into the wrong type of vaporizer, which might be causing problems, is still kind of unclear at the moment. But what is clear is that your traditional normal e-cigarettes are not the main cause or at all, if in any way, involved in this. Yet, we have a lot of advocates who have been trying to push for greater restrictions on e-cigarettes and vaping, using the tragic outbreak of lung ailments with several deaths now, in order to push through policies that they've wanted for years and have been unable to get because of the controversy, because the science really indicates that e-cigarettes, traditional e-cigarettes, are extremely helpful to smokers in quitting their smoking habit, and they are somewhere upwards of 95% less harmful than smoking. Mm-hmm. So what you have is when people switch over, you know, they're drastically reducing their risk for illness and death because, and I've seen this in the research literature, but also just talking to people, a lot of them quit smoking, you know, they switch entirely to e-cigarettes almost by accident. They just give it a try, and they like it so much that they can never fathom going back to smoking.
Yeah, we see it all the time. I see it all the time in places where normally you can't even smoke, but you can vape. And it doesn't seem to bother other people. Now, there are a bunch of issues, Michelle, that are coming together here, however. One is whether or not a vaping product has some harmful ingredients. There's also the question of whether or not people under 18 should be allowed to vape, right? So mm-hmm. you got the issue of kids using it. You got the issue of what's in it. As you mentioned, you got the issue of perhaps black market vaping products, which may be harmful. So you got all of this kind of jumbled in. Let me ask mm-hmm. you, do you think the federal government should be involved at all in looking into this product or doing something, or do you think this is more of a, say, a state or a local issue?
You know, normally I would say that one of the most important roles that the CDC plays, you know, the federal government's health body, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, one of the most important things they do is to investigate these sorts of localized outbreaks that start to bleed out into other states and trying to figure out the source of the problem and then communicate that to the public so that the public can avoid the risk, you know, save lives functionally. Like when there's an outbreak of salmonella, the CDC tracks down the source of it and says, you know, these are the products, you know, this chicken brand or this type of whatever should be avoided so that people can stop from getting sick. In this case, that's not what the CDC is doing, apparently. They've continued to put out statement after statement saying that people should avoid vaping, which is not helpful because the local authorities, local state departments, for example, New York just put out an alert a couple days ago saying that all except for one of the cases was conclusively linked to black market cannabis products. And yet the CDC is telling everyone, just stop vaping. That's, you know, millions and millions of adults who've been vaping every single day. That's not helpful advice for anybody. And it also, you know, it's not helpful advice for smokers who quit, who might end up going back to smoking, or just ignore the advice. It's really unhelpful for the people who might be using black market THC products because they don't know that that's what is causing this. All the news reports keep saying vaping and e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But the local health departments have actually done a fairly decent job of alerting the public. Some now are starting to echo what the CDC has been saying, the broad, you know, hopelessly vague advice that the CDC has been giving. But prior to that, health departments were warning people correctly in California, for example, saying all of this seems to be related to black market products. Mm-hmm. And if there's a role for the federal government, what it is to allow the states to legalize and regulate these products. Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is saying, you know, he has also said that this clearly is black market THC, but it shows how harmful this category of products are, which is, you know, saying that the states can't regulate it. The states could regulate it if they were allowed to. Right now, federal law makes cannabis products still functionally illegal, so most states don't have a robust regulated market, which is why you're seeing people go to the black market. And with restrictions on e-cigarettes, you know, none of us want minors who don't smoke to be using e-cigarettes of any kind. We don't want that. And we think that there's plenty of ways that government can rein that in, as we do with alcohol, for example. But you're never going to really stop it. You know, kids are going to get their hands, teenagers are going to get their hands on things that are adult products because kind of their job to rebel and try and pretend to be adults before they are. When you increase the restrictions, reduce the number of products that are legally available, what happens is people go to the black market. We're already seeing this, obviously, now with cannabis, and we're just starting to see the beginnings of it with e-cigarettes, where you have companies like Juul removing flavors that people want, and the black market is rising up with these fake versions of Juul mango pods to give to consumers who want it. And because they're in the black market, they're not as there's very little oversight there. They could be tainted, you know, most of the time unintentionally, but it's very hard to track that down. And, you know, there's just no guarantees when you're using the black market. And as government tries to squeeze people and restrict what they can get legally, they will, in larger numbers, go to this black market and be put at more risk.
We're talking with Michelle Minton of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we're talking about vaping. Is it safe? Is the black market involved? Where do you go to vape or to buy vaping products and feel that you don't have a problem? And Ed, my colleague Big Ed here, Michelle, does vape. And I noticed as you were talking, he was nodding his head in agreement with some of the things you were saying. Ed,
yeah,
go ahead. I want to get your take on it.
Michelle, I'm glad you're coming out with this and speaking about this, because I've been an e-cigarette user for almost 10 years. Straight now, and I have seen where they have tried to derail this product 3, 4, or 5 years ago. I remember somebody an e-cigarette exploded in the guy's face and he got burned. Well, we come to find out a couple months later that he modified it so he could smoke weed in it. And you know, to me, there's two types. I'm an e-cigarette user, and then there's vaping. And I used to be able to go into my into a place and use my e-cigarette, a sports bar. But now with the vaping, there's so much of the product coming out of this plume of smoke that people just freak when they see it. And, you know, I don't want somebody blowing that in my face. My e-cigarette puts out a tenth of that. And I just think, you know, they just blow it out. I don't know if it's for effect or what. But I think it's gone a little overboard. And when you talk about Juul and they have flavors that kids might enjoy, you know what? Last time I checked, there's a lot of alcohol called bubblegum and stuff like that. You know, bubblegum vodka, whatever.
Bubblegum vodka. Wow.
You know, you got to regulate it. You know, kids have always gotten their hands on things they're not supposed to. I mean, it was cool to roll your cigarette. Paul, you probably rolled your cigarettes up in your sleeve in high school. I mean, that's something they do. But, I mean, when this study came out that four people just passed away, and I'm sorry about that, and they all were vapors, well, what else did they do?
Yeah, that's
always
true. You
know, please don't put it all on that. So I'm glad this is coming out, because I enjoy my e-cigarette, and I can smoke it here at work. And I haven't touched a cigar or a cigarette in over 10 years, and I had a bad habit working in a nightclub of not the working in a nightclub part, but smoking in it. And I the day I picked it up, I said, I like this. I like it. And, you know, it's grown. It's gotten better. And there's more flavors for me. And I just really enjoy it. You know, when somebody comes by and goes, wow, is that mint chocolate? I'm like, yeah. Can I try that? No, sorry. I'm not going to let use my vape.
Yeah.
My e-cigarette. Okay, good. But no, I'm glad that you're speaking out about this, because, you know, I've been saying this all along, and I've been shaking my head yes this whole time you've been talking, because I'm glad you're coming out and speaking about this.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I just don't see, Michelle, are we going to be able to resolve this in the near future? It seems like with all of these different things happening, it's like when you got so much going on, you don't do anything because it just freezes you in place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of activity going on at the state level, at the federal level, even at the international level. You know, the WHO is talking about a standard international protocol of treating e-cigarettes the same way as they treat cigarettes, which would be devastating. This will not be resolved for many decades. And when it is finally resolved, all the people who've been freaking out and scaring the public about e-cigarettes, trying to make them seem exactly the same as cigarettes, they will be on the wrong side of history. Unfortunately, none of those people will really catch the blame for it, and they'll just move on to the next crusade that they have, and people will forget that they put millions of lives at risk by preventing access to potentially life-saving products. I'd love to address something that your producer said, which is, I think e-cigarette users, the people who've been using it for 5-10 years, have been doing a great job of trying to educate their family and friends, and that they need to do more of that, that there's no risk to them from the secondhand product. They also, but these users also need to be careful about that just giant plumes of smoke, you know, in public spaces where people don't know what it is and they're already scared because of these inflammatory news stories. You kind of have to think about, when am I going to use my, you know, when am I going to chase clouds or whatever they call it, with these giant plumes of vapor? Maybe keep that for at home, and then, you know, use a different type of e-cigarette when you're out in public. Or if you're doing that, just, you know, be a little bit more respectful towards the fact that people are have been terrified at this point because of the news media. It's a great story for the news media. It's the new cigarettes for them, a new evil, a new villain that they can target. Even if at the end of the day, what it is a life-saving technology doing something that public health has been trying to do for decades, which is get people to quit smoking.
Yeah.
And we've seen the rates of smoking in all ages, all age categories, hit the lowest rates on record. And that's at the same time as e-cigarettes have been very popular. So anybody who says it's a gateway, it's terrible for children, yes, there might be a very, very small 1% or under 1% of children who never smoked who are going to get into vaping, and that'll become a habit. There's also no guarantee they weren't ever going to smoke, but that's a different thing.
Right.
However, you know, there are millions of people who are switching away from smoking, and that will save their lives. If there's some small risk to them over the long term, we don't know what that is yet, but I feel like that's, anybody can do the math, that's worth it when you're saving lives.
And there's no tar, right, in vaping products. Like in a cigarette, isn't tar some one of the things that embeds itself on your lungs, whereas I don't know about vaping. It's got nicotine, but not tar. Is that right?
Yeah. There's an old saying in toxicology, which is people smoke for the nicotine and die from the tar. There's no tar in vaporized products because there's no combustion. So the risks for cancer, we're just talking about cancer, which is the number one risk when you're smoking, are almost negligible when it comes to e-cigarettes. As far as what we know from the research, there might be other risks, you know, maybe a little bit of inflammation, something like that, but maybe some kind of light cardiovascular changes that may or may not be dangerous. We don't know, but everything seems to point towards, if there are any risks, they are very, very small, you know, 1 to maybe 5% of the amount of risk of smoking. It is, nobody with a degree in science and any self-respect would deny that at this point.
Michelle, I want to say one thing, that Florida just passed a law that there's no smoking indoors, which includes vaping and e-cigarettes.
Yeah, it's awful. And again, this is a response to the way that people have been trying, advocates who get paid to do this. You know, they were formerly anti-tobacco advocates, and now they are anti-e-cigarette advocates. Because
they lump it all together.
Like I said, there's not a whole lot of smoking going on anymore. So there's not a whole lot of money in preventing smoking, so they've found a new target in e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
By lumping them in together, they make people think that the risks are the same. At this point, there's absolutely zero evidence of any risk to bystanders from vaping. And one of the great advantages, one of the reasons that convince people to switch to vaping is because you can do it places you can't smoke. You know, there's a few ways you can get people to switch. Say it's healthier, it tastes better, it's more convenient, or pleasurable, that kind of a thing. And slowly, one by one, the anti-e-cigarette advocates are stripping away all the advantages of e-cigarettes as compared with smoking, so that people will, in smaller numbers, choose to try it. It's getting more expensive. It's getting harder to use. It's starting to be even more demonized than smoking at this point. People are getting accosted on the streets by other people who know nothing about vaping, saying, you know, you're killing people around you by vaping. That's not okay. That people in the media and people in certain aspects of science, research, and advocacy are spreading these lies so that people who want to vape, who want to switch, who want to improve their risk that they could be healthy and around for their families are being demonized just for trying to save their lives.
Michelle, it is always a pleasure to have you on. You are so filled with knowledge. Very interesting. And I'm looking forward to talking with you, in fact, about the vaping situation down the road. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Anytime.
Okay. Michelle Minton, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Quick break. Quick break. We come back and we give you the top 10 states where robocalls come from.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Just listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on The Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us on our resurrected program. Do we call it that? You know, we've been around for a long time, but...
Let's say rejuvenation.
Oh, okay, rejuvenation. I like that. That's not like cryogenically resurrection, resurrecting somebody. Okay. Well, we're going to give you in a few minutes our top 10, the states where you are most likely to get a robocall. But I wanted to, we always talk every Monday when it's football season about our beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Ed, I watched that game. I watched it all the way through, and I had high hopes for our quarterback, Jameis Winston. However, is he not falling back into the same old bugaboo of throwing to the wrong guy? I think there was, two or three interceptions during the game, and San Francisco came out on the wrong end for us and the right end for them.
As we sat in the press box and groaned a lot, it's evident that this year is going to live or die by the guy wearing number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back to the car, my friends were there, and I placed a wager that by week 11, there would be someone other than number 3 starting.
Really? The quarterback, Jameis Winston, will not be around after week 11.
Yeah, this was a game that everybody penciled in as a win. And they just... were very lackluster, looked confused. And all through training camp, Bruce Arians, our new head coach, kept telling us how improved Jameis was. And we just didn't... We would look at each other and say...
This is year five for him, isn't it? Year five?
This is a contract year. You know, and he's being paid $20 million for 1 year.
That's even more than I make.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But... we didn't see it, and you know, when he went out on the field, you know, and just looked very lackluster, and we all looked at each other and said, "Still don't see
but
it."
But it's only week one.
It is only week one.
I mean, can't.
But you know what? There are flashes saying that's the guy. That's the guy we drafted. Yes, there. But just very, it looked like somebody stole his dog for the day or something. You know. That he was just really depressed looking. And,
you think so?
Yeah. Listen, he's got no competition at backup now. They got rid of him. You know, they got rid of Fitzpatrick.
That I think about it, they showed him coming off the field after an interception. He did look awfully down.
Yeah.
As in, I don't know, his mood might not have been positive or something.
Well, the Boo Birds were out very early yesterday.
Maybe that was it. Yeah.
They were out very early.
So do you think he's losing confidence or, you know what I mean?
Week by week. It could be day by day, actually.
What do you think about this new coach for the Bucks?
I like him. And there's this sneaky thing that our general manager, Jason Light, signed a contract way back when, and they didn't tell us that he got a new contract until just now. And it was tied to the coach coming here because they're good buddies. So I think that was a little sneaky there. And it starts at the top, and Jason Light is just a horrible general manager. His drafting is horrible, and I feel sorry for the people that are spending that kind of money. And, you know, yesterday at a free concert, but it was 100 degrees out there.
Very
and people
hot.
People were dropping like flies out there.
Did they have a good crowd?
Yeah, actually, it was better than I thought. Was it a sellout? No, but they deemed it a sellout.
It did look like a good crowd, though.
It was decent, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, it's time for our top 10. You know, that always was one of the big things in our program. We're going to keep it going. And this is the top 10 states where you will most likely get a robocall. Now, this is from the Federal Trade Commission. And this comes from the list of do not call complaints from 2018. So here we go. Top 10 states where you most likely will get a robocall. Number 10. And I would not have thought so, but Michigan. Michigan's number 10. I don't know if it's the Detroit area. Or there's a bunch of big towns there. But it's Michigan. All right. How I wish again I was in Michigan. You ever hear that song?
I did.
Oh, that's too bad. All right. Number 9. Florida. Now, I would have thought Florida was number 1. And that's only because of the number of calls I get. How about you, Ed? Would you have thought Florida was higher on the list?
I get my share.
Yeah. But are you surprised Florida's only number 9? That's my question.
I thought it'd be top 5.
Yeah. Exactly. Number 8. Maryland. Now, where the heck in Maryland do you want to call with a robocall? I don't know. Baltimore? They don't have any money. Oh, some of them do, I guess. All right. Number 7. Virginia. Not surprising. Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of
politicians.
Lots of politicians and government workers. They got a lot of money. Number 6. I'm not surprised about Connecticut. You know, Connecticut's got a lot of wealth, I guess. Mm-hmm. They used to, at least. Number 5. New Jersey. Same thing as Connecticut, as far as I'm concerned.
Just down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Number 4. Oregon. It surprised me a little bit. I guess you could. Portland is the main area there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of robocalls. Number 3. Arizona. Now, Arizona, a lot of people retire to, and they got some spending money, so I can understand Arizona. Number 2. Colorado. Now, you go there on a regular basis. Do you get any robocalls when you're
from Florida?
From Florida, yeah. Well, you take your cell phone, that's why.
Yeah.
All right. What do you think, Ed? What is the number 1 state where you get the most robocalls?
Probably like somewhere, I don't know, Iowa?
Iowa?
Yeah, there's not much to do in Iowa, so people probably look forward to the calls.
Okay. You know? Drum roll, please.
All right. And the number 1.
Number 1 is Nevada.
Nevada.
Yeah. Where all the gamblers are.
It's out
Maybe
there.
They gamble on robocalls. Yep. I don't know. Well, that is it, my friends. We want to thank you so very much for being with us as we are back. Remember, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Freedom works.